When we look at monoglycerides, what we're really doing is we're taking that fatty acid and we're combining it with a glycerol backbone. And this is called, it's called an ester, which is simply just taking an alcohol and an acid and combining them. And not to get deep into the organic chemistry or anything, but what's important to recognize is that when we combine those two items and we form that monoglyceride, we ultimately change a lot of the physical handling characteristics of that product, which actually has some advantages, and then also has a very different mode of action.
It's time for a new era of communication in the swine industry, one that you can get the latest updates while commuting or driving to farms. Here, you will have the brightest minds of the global swine industry in your pocket. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Healthy Farms by Bioverse, your manure management experts. FeedFlow, feed is too expensive to ignore. Take control with FeedFlow. AccuFast, the best way to predict the future is to create it. Start creating your future today at AccuFastSwine.com.
Hello, welcome to our latest edition of Swine It Podcast. I'm Jerry Purvis, your host today, and we have a very special guest, Mark Whitney, today. Mark, welcome to the podcast today.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Mark, you've got a pretty storied experiences and your education. It's pretty awesome, but I want to let you maybe tell us a little, the audience, a little bit more about yourself and how you got here.
Yeah. I've been very fortunate in my career to have been surrounded and learned from a lot of very smart people. And so I started my career. I do have a PhD in swine nutrition. When I had finished up with that, I was also full-time managing research trials at the University of Minnesota. That was kind of the beginning of my career, was working on research trials there for 7 years, actually. And then I took a position with our swine extension group in Minnesota, and so got the opportunity to do a lot of outreach work, work very closely with our state and national pork producer groups. Did that for the better part of 10 years. And then the past 11 years or so now, I've been working on the business or the commercial side of things. So I've spent some time with Purina as a field nutritionist, a little bit of time with Zinpro and Tech Service, Formafeed, more recently, again, field nutrition and some research and product development type activities. And then most recently here, just this past summer, I joined Eastman Animal Nutrition, and I know a lot of folks aren't familiar with Eastman, but they're Eastman as in the Kodak Eastman company. Folks usually recommend or recognize Kodak. The Kodak part has been spun off now, but Eastman anyway is a large chemical company, and they've been supplying various different organic acids and other products to the animal industry for decades, but most recently now, they've gone ahead and concentrated on spending more time developing to the consumer products, products to utilize on the farm at the feed mill. And so I was fortunate enough to come in and be their swine tech service manager. And so I've really been enjoying it. We've got some products, but we're also very much involved in developing products. We're early in that avenue. And so that's also where I kind of come in today is that a lot of our expertise is in the organic acids and the monoglyceride side of things, and their use in swine production. So very happy and pleased to be able to join you here.
Eastman serves veterinarians and nutritionists in agrochemical and animal health industries by helping them select, evaluate, and implement innovative nutritional programs. Eastman works with your team to customize your gut health approach in feed and water. Eastman's approach addresses nutritional and bacterial challenges and finds new ingredient preservation and hygiene solutions. Explore ways to accelerate and innovate your programs. Contact the Animal Nutrition Team at eastman.com.
Very good. You know, as you and I have talked earlier, we've seen a progression of losing antibiotics. And when we started out, when I started out my career, you know, every feed you used antibiotics. Maybe sometimes, you know, you didn't really know what you had a problem, but you just know, you knew that when you put in an antibiotic or growth promoted level, that you got better feed efficiency, better mortality. And so, but those days are gone, we're going to lose those, or already lost most of those products. So it's very interesting. I think, as we discussed, there's been a lot of products out here on the markets, and I think the consumer, the producers, maybe it's hard to understand what are the differences in these products, how do they work differently, and what's the application for these products. So I think, you know, it's a good point. I really think the viewers and myself personally understand monoglycerides a little better. So if you want to take a minute, just tell us a little bit about how that product is.
Yeah, definitely. And I do, it's great. We have a lot of different technologies or tools, if you want to call them, that we can utilize now. And certainly a lot more attention has come to that since antibiotics have become restricted in their use. And so certainly monoglycerides would be one of that area also where we've learned a lot more in the last 10 years than we ever did. I think some folks might recognize, the use of fatty acids, medium chain fatty acids, for instance, more so than monoglycerides. That's kind of where a lot of the research was done initially. And when we look at monoglycerides, what we're really doing is we're taking that fatty acid and we're combining it with a glycerol backbone. And this is called an ester, which is simply just taking an alcohol and an acid and combining them. And not to get deep into the organic chemistry or anything, but what's important to recognize is that when we combine those two items and we form that monoglyceride, we ultimately change a lot of the physical handling characteristics of that product, which actually has some advantages, and then it also has a very different mode of action versus that fatty acid or organic acid does by itself. So that's really the main difference. You know, fatty acids, I think there's been a fair bit of very good data looking at those, and they're very effective. They show to have very good antimicrobial activity, but it's very much dependent on the pH in the gut of the pig. So we have a term called the pKa, which is simply that point or that pH where that acid can either dissociate or remain intact. And so if we get below that pKa, so if our pH is below that, we actually have that intact, undissociated form, and that's the form that's active against the bacteria and the microbes. And it's because you look at the pathogens, the bacteria, they will take in that that undissociated form of that fatty acid. And then when it's brought into their within their membrane, because they have a higher pH, it becomes dissociated. And the challenge there is that's where it really acts like an acid. And the challenges for the bacteria is it really interferes with the maintenance and replication of RNA and DNA. And also that bacteria will spend a lot of energy trying to pump out the proton that's released when that acid is brought in. And so that's the way that it has that antibacterial activity. It works very well, but because it's pH dependent, most of that activity is going to be primarily in the stomach and then the very beginning part of the small intestine. But when you get very far into the small intestine and certainly in the large intestine, you're not having the antimicrobial activity. Instead, that fatty acid or organic acid has dissociated, and now it's going to be used as an energy source for the pig, which is also a very good thing. But the challenge, like I say there, a lot of our gastrointestinal issues oftentimes are going to be farther down in the intestinal tract, right? They're going to be in the small intestine or in the large intestine. And particularly if you think about, you know, some of our scouring and diarrhea challenges we have in nursery pigs, for instance, which is pretty common with stress at weaning. That's due to, more times than not, that's a proliferation of different pathogens. Could be E. coli, could be any of a number of different pathogens that will proliferate in the gut and then release toxins, cause various challenges and issues, and ultimately it elicits an immune response in the pig. So monoglycerides, interestingly enough, when we take that fatty acid and attach it to that glyceride, we're now able to essentially carry that fatty acid on that glyceride backbone further into the GI tract. And so we can have very good antimicrobial activity in the intestine and even into the large intestine. And it's not dependent on the pH of the gut because it's a very different mode of action that it works at. So that's kind of the gist of monoglycerides from that standpoint is that instead of it having to be dependent on the pH, it actually forms what we call micelles, which you can think of as like little spheres. If you have enough of a concentration of that monoglyceride, it will form these little spheres, and they forms these spheres because that fatty acid portion of the glyceride is kind of what we call the head of that molecule, and that is hydrophilic. It likes aqueous solutions, versus the glycerol backbone of it, or the tail, is hydrophobic. It doesn't want to be in there. And so the tails all go inside the sphere and the heads are exposed on the outside. But when it forms this micelle, that micelle is able to interact with this phospholipid bilayer, that's the bacterial cell membrane. And it ultimately increases permeability and causes leakage and can, at the very least, interfere with the ability of that bacteria to replicate. But more times than not, you'll see it kill the bacteria because you have a lot of its intracellular contents are actually, you know, it causes cell lysis and it kills the bacteria because it's compromised that membrane.
Now, you mentioned that was a good description. So it's kind of like we're getting that product farther down the GI tract to where it's needed. And I was just thinking, you know, you mentioned E. coli, but is it targeting toward certain pathogens, or does it have pretty much a wider branch?
Yeah, we do have a wider range. You're looking at both gram-positive and gram-negative bacteria, but it's really going to be dependent on which monoglyceride we're talking about. We look at the short chain and some of the shorter medium chain monoglycerides, they're going to be more towards targeting those gram-negative bacteria. But we look at the larger or the longer length medium chain monoglycerides, now we're able to target some of the gram-positive bacteria. And so, and additionally to that, the viruses that are enveloped, so they kind of in some ways kind of look like bacteria as far as that membrane outside, they can be impacted also with some of these longer medium chain monoglycerides. So we've seen good data there that shows effectiveness against the PRRS virus, against PED, and even African swine fever. But it's going to dependent on what that organism is. It's dependent on which monoglyceride or combination of monoglycerides we're talking about, and what the concentration is that you need to become or to meet in order to have an effective impact on the pathogen.
You know, Mark, as I was thinking, I've understood organic acids, and when you say that, I always think of, you know, medium chain fatty acids, you know, short chain fatty acids, but I always wondered, this product, how does it compare to medium chain fatty acids and how it works and maybe its application?
Yeah. So a major difference, most common for folks would be the medium chain side. So we'll talk about those, but this also is applicable to the short chain also for the most part. There's a number of different things that are different when we change it to that monoglyceride form. For one thing, oftentimes your organic acids are going to have a pretty strong, unpleasant smell. and they can have an unpleasant taste. So you can have some issues with palatability if you have a high enough concentration in the diet. When we move that fatty acid into a monoglyceride form, that for the most part eliminates that odor and also that unpleasant taste. So you have an improvement in palatability. And
that's
also
gotta be huge. Yeah.
Yeah, and also think about the folks that are involved with making the feed and transporting the feed, it's a better work environment for them also. So yeah. That's one of the main differences there. A major one is that monoglycerides, we can use considerably less of those to have a similar antimicrobial impact as we would for that specific fatty acid. And we're talking anywhere in the range of 3 times to even 30 times less.
Wow.
Monoglyceride being used versus its respective fatty acid. So that really helps when we're talking about the economics of trying to utilize these products. Certainly these monoglycerides are not inexpensive by any means, but it's our ability to be able to effectively use lower levels of those allows us to bring them into diets.
Yeah, you know, we were all looking at when PED, you know, of course, we were lucky we got PED late, but, you know, a lot of people looking at products like this, but they are, like you said, medium chain fat acids are very expensive, and you had to use such a high, I mean, the least, I mean, were what, 6 or 8 pounds per ton of feed.
Right.
So very expensive to use unless you know, you know. You've got a problem, and then it's too late once you've got a problem.
Well, that's the other thing too. I mean, these items are not unlike most items that you want to, for them to be very effective, you need to be proactively utilizing them, right?
Yeah.
Before the health challenge. But then you have to be able to justify the cost of using it because it's essentially an insurance policy, right? Versus after the fact, when the disease has already occurred, you may be able to help some, but you're going to be limited in how far you can bring that pig health back and performance. So, so continuing on with that, you know, the other thing we kind of touched on it a little bit, but when you look at the activity and absorption, we're able to go farther into the GI tract. And so that's a significant difference with that monoglyceride versus the fatty acid source. And that's pretty key for a lot of those pathogens we think about when we have digestive issues. The organic acids themselves are typically quite corrosive, at least yeah. in their straight form. And so we largely eliminate that when we include them as a monoglyceride form also, so you don't have to worry about the extra wear and tear on your feed manufacturing and transportation and feeders and all those kind of equipment. Additionally, monoglycerides are much more soluble in water than their respective fatty acids. So now we've got the opportunity to look at and maybe have some drinking water applications where, yes, okay, we picked up that something is starting up in the barn. We want to act to it quickly. Well, we can be very quick with it, including it in the water versus if we need it included in the feed. Well, you know, how many days of feed do we have left yet before the next batch of feed goes in? So it gives us some increased flexibility and timeliness there from that standpoint. So there's a number of positives there. In general, a lot of folks, if they're considering using monoglycerides, they're focusing primarily on the nursery phase, right? And oftentimes we pellet at least the first diet or two, maybe we pellet all the nursery diets. One of the questions becomes how stable are these monoglycerides? And they're very stable. That covalent bond that's holding that glycerol and that fatty acid together is very stable up past 230 degrees Celsius. So pelleting is not an issue there. And then as I also stated beforehand, you've got the ability to not be dependent on the pH in the gut with these monoglycerides. And particularly in a newly weaned young piglet, that pig is challenged to produce an acidic enough environment in its gut. That's why we're oftentimes using products such as organic acids is to try to assist that piglet that first week or two at least because in general, when we look at our pathogenic bacteria, they don't fare as well at a lower pH versus our beneficial bacteria that we do want to be in the gut and is part of a healthy microflora.
Yeah, for sure. Acidifier is really helpful there, especially that first diet, you know, or two, that pig's pH is not producing HCl, so really tough and to digest and the nutrients we're trying. So that's kind of the spot where these products you're putting those in throughout the nursery phase. And what kind of benefits do you see? Let's say an average barn, do you have to see benefits, you know, when you've got a certain pathogenic, you know, challenge?
Yeah. It's like with all of these different additive products, we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier when just you and I were discussing, but it depends, right? It's every site, every flow, even every group of pigs oftentimes will have different challenges. And that's really one of the challenging things. And one of the frustrating things for producers is trying to have some consistency there and trying to be able to identify what's most appropriate from an intervention standpoint to help assist with maintaining that health. So it is going to be very much dependent. I can tell you, you know, we've done part of it here is and what's key is, you know, I've talked kind of about individual monoglycerides, but in actuality, in practice, what we found is if we combine different monoglycerides or if we combine monoglycerides with organic acids, it's very much a synergistic impact on that antimicrobial impact and that positive impact on pig performance. So 1 + 1 = 2, it equals 3 or 4. And it makes sense because we're talking about different modes of action. We're talking about different parts of the gut that are maybe impacted. And I think a big part of it also is if we have these products that are combination products, it improves our expectancy for consistent response. And that's a challenge we have with quite frankly with any and all feed additives to some level is we tend to have some variability from time to time. Again, it's because we have variability in the health as much as anything of these pigs, different flows. So when we look at combinations, I can tell you, you know, we've done some research here at Eastman with a couple of our products. We've got a Citra is a product that's an organic acid blend. And then we have another product called Enterra Nova 410. It's a blend of some medium chain monoglycerides. And we found looking in studies and field trials that we can have some response with either of those products on their own. And that's going to be a positive response there in what I would consider normal health situations. So we don't have a train wreck going on. But these are also not, you know, completely clean animals either. They've got kind of some of the similar, I would say, typical challenges we oftentimes see in nursery pigs. When we put the combination of those two products together, we can use a little bit less of each of those products and yet still see a further improvement in growth performance. So, and it's hard to put a number on it simply from a standpoint of every aspect is different, but I can just tell you on this last study that we did, it was again fairly healthy pigs, but kind of normal health challenges in there, and we still saw a good 2-to-1 return on investment. Even though we're using two different products, which I think a lot of folks, particularly the producers or owners, are like, you know, hey, this is increasing my cost of my feed. But ultimately what we're looking at and what we're worried about is what is going to be our return over costs for that feed. And so we've been able to demonstrate that fairly well. And so it's not just that ROI number, but I think also if you're able to have a much more consistent response, that is worth a lot in and of itself there also.
Yeah. You know, it's a good point. I think as producers, particularly in challenging economic times, that we try to be reactive. You know, we wait till we have a problem and then we try to throw something at it. And many times, you know, that challenge cost us way more than what it would have cost us had we just been more proactive and you know, put a little bit of insurance in the feed. So sometimes I think we're our own worst enemy, and an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I mean, that's we all heard that our whole lives, you know.
Yeah, and hindsight's 20/20 also, right?
Yes, I knew that was going to happen. But I think, you know, there are no 100% healthy herds anywhere out here. You know, we're always one break or one challenge and the devastation. But I think that is a good point. And I see that across the industry is looking at these different technologies and putting them together and the synergies.
Yes.
And, and I think that's I think that's a very important point, you know, that you're seeing some synergies here that we can,
and I've been concentrating on just monoglycerides and organic acids, but certainly there's also some good data out there to show and demonstrate that synergy of combining monoglycerides with say some phytogenic compounds or essential oils or direct fed microbials. And so if a producer has a product, a direct fed microbial, for instance, or some sort of phytogenic compound that they found works well, you don't have to go away from it. You may be able to further enhance the value of that product when you combine it with something like a monoglyceride. The challenge is truly trying to understand what's the ideal combination, you know, given the situation. And that's probably also going to be a moving target to some level. So, but that's kind of where we're trying to strategize and utilize these technologies appropriately is from that standpoint of identifying pluses and minuses of each of these technologies and then applying them based on the scenario or situation to at least initially give you the best opportunity. And then certainly I'm sure you've run into this too, Jerry, where you end up having to tweak that as you go on, fine tune that program, but utilizing these additives, it's very much that way. You know, going back to your point on being proactive, you know, these have immense value from a risk management standpoint. When you're thinking about the health of the pig, you know, you look at the gastrointestinal tract from an immune system standpoint, the vast majority of the immune system is in the GI tract. I think a lot of folks don't think about that. But so we can have significant impacts, positive or negative, with different nutritional interventions simply because of that. And so one of the other things that is pretty neat and exciting with monoglycerides that we see is that we have a significant impact not only on the integrity of the enterocytes or those cells lining the gut themselves, improving the tight junction, minimizing the gaps there, those kind of things. And I think a lot of folks use butyrate or butyric acid or monobutyrin, you know, for that standpoint. But we also find that some of these monoglycerides, particularly the medium chain ones, have an impact on helping to modulate the immune response. And so, in other words, if a pig does have a pathogenic insult, if you want to call it, we do need the immune system to respond, but we don't want it to respond too immensely, right? Over stimulate. So we find that there's various different cytokines that are released that serve as messengers when you have a pathogen in the gut, and this elicits a number of different responses in the animal, including fever, including reduced feed intake. These are all Mother Nature's way of trying to help minimize and protect that pig. But the challenge is we'd still like those pigs to eat. And, you know, if we decrease intake too much, that can have other detrimental effects, of course, as well. And so usually these monoglycerides, it's been shown to reduce significantly the level of some of these cytokines or these messengers the interleukins and the tumor necrosis factors and all these other scientific, terms. Yeah. But it reduces the level of those messengers, and so you have a much more you have an immune response, but it's not an over response, which we particularly see in these young, essentially immature pigs, at weaning. And so it helps them to recover more quickly because they typically don't drop feed intake as much. They don't have it impacting them negatively quite as hard initially. And it just gives them a better chance from an immune system standpoint to deal with that. So again, that's another situation where if you have it in ahead of time, that pig's immune system is already primed up and also set to respond appropriately to pathogens, then you won't see near the impact that you would otherwise.
Right. That's a good point. I think we forget sometimes, we need this immune response, but the longer that response is goes on, or the potency, then all of a sudden now we've got that pig is off feed. It's not eating. It's just laying around. It feels terrible. And so, we've seen that back with COVID. We saw how an really active immune system, it's a double-edged sword. We need that. We need that response, but we don't want it, too big a response. And we want that pig to get back to normal. And so that's an area that we're starting to see a lot more interest in trying to, as you said, modulate that response and get the right spots when we need it, but not have it chronically activated,
yes,
all the time. And then robbing the animal of nutrients, because it's funding their immune response.
And it's not just the impact. A lot of it's noticeable, say the first couple of weeks after weaning, right? When you have that insult, and then the pig appears to recover. But we also see there's some long lasting detrimental impacts when you look at the integrity of these cells in the intestine. Yeah. And their function. So it's, and it's very hard to measure that. But certainly we can show that and demonstrate that. And so, typically that animal never does fully totally recover. Yeah. If they've had a very significant, response and to a pathogen. So if we can minimize that, we can minimize, some of the detrimental factors initially, we can also greatly affect, long-term, the viability of that pig and its efficiency to be able to perform.
Yeah, that pig should grow better. Yeah, it's got a better absorption, better digestion. It's taking in more of those nutrients, so that pig should be, like you said, beneficial on into for the rest of his life. So
yeah,
pretty good stuff there. My wife always says I always relate everything back to pigs, but I think that you're seeing a lot of that interest in the human side too as well. Is trying to really focus on gut health.
Yes. And there's been a lot of work and increased usage of monoglycerides on the human health standpoint too, exactly for the same reasons that we use it in pigs. It's one of the reasons why I really enjoy pig nutrition, swine nutrition, is because, the pig is as close to the human nutritional system is, GI tract is you're going to get. Yes. Okay. The pig's got maybe a little longer GI tract, but we've got kind of some similarities in size, and certainly the function is very, very similar. And that's why you see the pig obviously as a biomedical model oftentimes for various different reasons. But, so it's neat. We borrow from the human nutrition side sometimes to do things on the animal side and vice versa. Also oftentimes we're doing stuff where we discover things, on the pig side of things, and then they start expanding on that on the human nutrition side.
Exactly. Yep. It's a good model, like you said, and that's what makes it interesting. So much carryover between pigs and people. So it's very interesting. Now, I got one question before we get to our last questions, three questions. But, it seems now everyone is worried about with antibiotics and resistance. How would a monoglyceride how does that work? And do you have risk there compare the risk of antibiotic resistance with antibiotics that you see?
That's a great question, Jerry. And it's oftentimes, you know, one that's brought up to me. In many ways, you can think of these monoglycerides acting kind of similar to antibiotics, right? In that antiviral and antibacterial standpoint. But one of the key things that I think is very encouraging is you know, there's been some studies that have looked at if we can have development of resistance from pathogens if we're using these monoglycerides, either at in longer term levels or lower levels or what have you. And we really significantly lower the possibility of development of resistance. So that's one of the key advantages also that certainly as we look forward, I think, you know, we're not going to be, I don't have a crystal ball, but I think we're going to have the ability to utilize these technologies, this technology for a long, long time, because certainly right now we're not seeing any negative connotations spilling over from a resistant standpoint or, you know, something that particularly on the human side of things people would be concerned with.
Yeah, I think that's a key point, and I think that's what is on the minds of consumers today. They're really, you know, really focused on, as they should be, you know, the risk of developing these, you know, these super bugs. And I think that's one of the key reasons why we're, you know, we don't have antibiotics. And so it's good to know that we, you know, got products out here that we can get, you know, obviously we got an animal that's sick, we're going to treat that animal. But if we can, prevent that animal and allow him to get over that, you know, that challenge, without much impact, then we're all winners. You know, the animal's winners, the producer, and everyone wins. So,
and you look at something like monoglycerides. I mean, it's being provided some just in nature in general. You know, there are some, albeit not typical, ingredient sources that would have some levels of them. But you look at the milk in the sow, for instance, that's got some monoglycerides, and it has some a fair number of triglycerides that part of their usage is they're broken down into dye and mono glycerides and then can have some impacts there. So in many ways, we're kind of just expanding on what's already been there because now we've recognized that it's an advantage. It works well, and now we're increasing our understanding of how to most appropriately apply that, right?
Right. Well, very good. Well, as Wayne Cass would say, I reserve the right to get smarter. And so I feel like I'm glad to have you on the show today because I got smarter. I learned something about a product that I didn't know about before we talked about it. So very good, and it's very interesting. So really appreciate it, Mark.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. Digesterom Finish from DSM Firmenich can help your pigs finish faster, get better efficiency with improved profitability with Digesterom Finish. MetaFarms, transforming agriculture with data-driven solutions for pork producers. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. FeedFlow is changing the way the swine industry sees feed. As the world's only on-pipe feed sensor, FeedFlow tells you exactly how much feed is being delivered to your animals, so you can be sure that every pig in your barn is well-fed and growing. With industry-leading precision and up-to-the-minute real-time data and alerts, FeedFlow is a simple and affordable way to improve production outcomes across your organization. Feed is too expensive to ignore. Try FeedFlow today.
Before we leave, we got three questions we'd like to ask every guest. First one is, what is your favorite resource? Could be a book or...
And I think a lot of folks, you know, refer back to the NRC, and that's always something that I'm always going to look back onto. But in addition to that, you know, one of my references, it's getting a little bit older now, but I still go back to it a lot, is a Swine Nutrition book edited by Lewis and Southern.
Got that. Yeah, I got a copy of that one. Yeah.
And that's just, you know, it covers a variety of different things on the nutrition side, various different micro and macro ingredients and how they impact the body and how they're, you know, utilized. So I guess that one I enjoy as much as anything when I'm trying to better understand some various different nutritional component. That'll be where I start.
That's a good point. I mean, you know, as nutritionists, I think you have to know a lot about a lot of different things, and it's hard to know a lot about anything. It seems sometimes.
I'm very fortunate. Part of my wanting to be in this tech service role is that I can, not that I don't still need to know a lot of other things, but I can hone my concentration a little bit more on some specific things versus in my past being out there in the field and working with producers. You truly end up being a jack of all trades, and it's very challenging.
It is very good. All right, and secondly, who was your most? I know this is a tough question for me if you asked me, but who would be your most influential person in your career?
There would be several people. I would say the number one person, though, because it influenced me early on. I had a professor when I was at North Dakota State finishing up my undergrad. His name was Jim Tilton, and he's actually a reproduction physiology professor, and he wanted me to go reproduction physiology, and I almost did. I ended up going down the nutrition side, but he's the one that really impressed upon me what's important, and also got me very interested in graduate school, and so I certainly wouldn't be where I was at. It wasn't part of my initial plan. Let's say I was planning on going back to the farm and raising pigs and that would have turned out great too. But Dr. Tilton really kind of increased my interest in my understanding of some things that I wanted to pursue further. So thanks to him, I stayed at North Dakota State and did a master's degree, albeit in nutrition, and then moved to Minnesota and furthered my educational and career and obviously various different experiences.
Very good. Last question. What would you say, in your opinion, were the qualities of people in our industry that make them successful? What do you think are some of the?
Yeah, there's
of the successful people. What are the qualities that you see that we see?
I think certainly persistence has got to be one of them. And especially when we see, you know, the economic times that particularly our producers are under this past year, you've got to be persistent and you've got to have a real zest and a real love for what you're doing. Because I think there's a lot of jobs out there that would be a lot easier, perhaps a lot less stressful. And when you looked at folks that are successful, you got to have that zest and you've got to have that determination. And then the other thing I would point out is it kind of relates to our talk here today is you've got to be very open-minded and always be looking at what's next from a standpoint of things that might benefit your company, whether it be you're raising pigs or if you're part of a nutrition company or a feed manufacturing company. These are companies and businesses not unlike other businesses. And if you aren't continuously looking at improving, then you're moving backwards. So I would say that's the other key component that I think is with successful people that they have done. It doesn't mean that you need to jump on something immediately when you first hear about it, but you want to always keep your mind open, do your due diligence and keep an open mind on considering different options and that there's always perhaps a better way of doing what you're currently doing.
Yep. Yeah. To your point, farming is definitely not for the somebody that's not really tough. You know, our farmers are tough people. They get up every day and the economics maybe aren't good, but they keep going and they live to fight another day. And very true, your point, you know, we got to keep going. And I appreciate, you know, people like you that are looking at and add more tools to our toolbox, you know.
Well, and hopefully we're there to help because those producers have to wear so many different hats. And the industry is much different today than it was 20, 30 years ago. I think it's not only important, but it's key that those of us that are in support roles, we do everything we can to help bring forward that new information and help folks, because you just there's so many hats that a producer has to wear, and you just can't do it nowadays without relying on a number of different resources, and so, you know, a nutritional standpoint, I would say that's certainly one of them also, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I always say, I don't have to be smart. I just have to know a lot of smart people.
So, yeah.
If I need an answer for something, you can always, you know, you're only a call away from getting the right answer and getting some help. So it's good. And it's a good industry. You know, it's a small world. Everybody, we're all kind of related. Technically, we'll get, we know somebody that they know, or they know somebody we know. It's really a tight-knit community, and I like that people are helping each other, you know. And
yeah, I feel very fortunate to be part of this industry. We've got a lot of really incredible, good people throughout the industry, and so it certainly makes my job very enjoyable to work with various different folks. And like you say, we're all connected. We're not that large of an industry that it's a pretty small world.
Yeah, very good. Yep, totally agree. Well, Mark, come to the end of our time, but really appreciate you coming on the show today and talking with us. And I'm sure the viewers have learned just as much as I have. And we look forward to more options and seeing more opportunities and what with these new products and combinations as well. So
very much so. Enjoyed our conversation, Jerry. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
Looking to elevate your brand and captivate audiences through the power of podcasting? Look no further. Introducing the custom podcast brought to you by Wisemetics, where we take care of the behind the scenes so that you can focus on what truly matters. Podcasting has become an invaluable tool for brand awareness, but let's face it, putting it into practice can be a daunting task. It's incredibly time consuming and requires technical know-how. But don't worry, we've got you covered. With our experienced team at the helm, we'll handle the operational aspects so you can channel your energy into what your company does best. Are you ready to unleash the podcasting potential of your company? Schedule a call with one of our specialists today at the link in the bottom of this episode. You'll also receive a free podcast strategy consult tailored to the unique needs and goals of your business.